One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Gamescoop. I'm Damon Hatfield, and contrary to what you might have heard, I am the host of Gamescoop, not Sam Claiborne, although Sam is here today. Welcome back, Sam.
Zabab, thank you for welcoming me back.
Tom, welcome back to the show. It's been too long. And our reporter in the field, Michael Swaim, is here.
Swaim Scoop. Yeah, you can consider me. I want no more references to why I'm holding a mic. Just let it fester in the audience's mind, please.
Forget I said it.
Good to
forget
be
I said anything. We have a great show for you this week. We're going to be talking a lot about Steam Deck, which Tom has played, I believe. And
you need two hands to play that system, by the way, Swaim.
Yes. So, yeah. If you get the Steam Deck while the show is happening, you might have to put the microphone down.
I'll be the judge of that.
We're also going to flip through the July 1993 issue of Die Hard Game Fan, which includes some juicy controversy, some beef between Die Hard Game Fan and Electronic Gaming Monthly.
I think it's a German magazine, so it's Die Hard Game Fan.
It's Die Hard Game
Fan. The Hard Game Fan?
Yes. The Hard Game Fan.
But first, you've probably heard by now, Valve has announced a portable PC gaming device, their own handheld, a true next-gen gaming handheld called the Steam Deck. And I think it seems really cool. And I think Tom and a few others at IGN, like Bo and Ryan, got to play it up in Seattle. And man, this thing seems pretty cool to me. I think everyone has probably heard about this by now, but this is Valve's next-gen handheld device. It comes in three SKUs, and it's considerably more powerful than the Switch.
Solution,
can do everything the Switch can, except play Nintendo exclusives, right?
Right, mm-hmm. Which is a pretty big butt in the world of Nintendo, right?
Like, sure.
Mario and Zelda are worth a lot. But yeah, we went up to Valve for 2 days. We got to play pretty unrestricted on this thing. Got to play, you know, a bunch of different games from Hades to Death Stranding on it. And it's really cool. Like, it is really, I think everyone on our team who got to try it left pretty impressed by it. It's not, you know, it's funny to call it next gen because it's like not as strong as next gen consoles necessarily, also it's running at, it's got a 720, basically 720p screen. So it is still running games incredibly well. Like, they look really, really good because the smaller resolution lets them, they're not trying to hit 4K with this thing, right? Mm-hmm. Although if you hooked it up to a monitor, it could output 4K. I just don't know. It probably wouldn't run games at that resolution crazy well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a really cool device. It's very unexpected from Valve, I think, at least at this moment. It's also filling that sort of gap of, you know, the OLED Switch got announced and everyone had been hoping for a Switch Pro, and then Valve comes along and here's something similar to what that is. So that's exciting. Yeah.
I mean, announced on the day that Switch OLED model pre-orders went live.
Right.
Tom, did you actually hold and play it yourself?
I did. Yeah.
So is it heavier than like a big blue microphone?
Well, big blue microphone is hard for me to judge, but it is heavier. But like, so this is actually something that I saw a lot of people looked at it and they're off put by the controller design, right? Because the sticks and the buttons and the D-pad are all in line with each other rather than staggered. I saw this thing, me and Bo Moore as well, both of us looked at it and we're like, this looks weird with this design the exact same way. And then the second we held it, we were like, oh, this just feels natural and makes sense.
Oh, cool.
It's I think a very comfy device. It is very kind of they thought about the ergonomics of it a lot, and it is heavier than a Switch. It is absolutely heavier than a Switch, but I'd say it's more comfortable to use overall because the Switch is like, you know, I love my Switch, but it's not like ergonomically designed in any way, right? It's just a candy bar, basically.
I was going to say, I didn't know if that was like okay to say, but as someone with large hands bred for holding big, heavy microphones, I find the Switch paddle almost like a complete afterthought. There's no ergonomics to it, really. You just get used to it. So this looks like I could get used to it. Did you find yourself using the trackpad much? And did that feel like crisp and responsive as like a cursor pad?
I didn't use the trackpad a ton. I was mostly playing kind of more controller minded games. Bo definitely did, and he has some thoughts on that in his hands-on preview. But the trackpad is definitely better than, they've said it's like 50% more responsive or something than what the Steam controller trackpads had. They put trackpads on, like, everyone thinks back, I think with Valve, they think back to the hardware that they made that they stumbled on, which was like Steam machines and the Steam controller. But it's easy to kind of forget within that they also made, they helped with the Vive. They made the Index, and the Index had trackpads on it that were totally great and fine to use on their controllers. I think the vibe I got when I used the little bit I did use of it is that it will absolutely be something that people who like that sort of control scheme probably will be happy using. And the other thing I'll mention, because it's not like a totally, like, it's not a very obvious thing about this device, both the trackpads and the joysticks are capacitive, which means that they can detect when your thumb is on them. And what that did is, like, one of the things that we did that was super weird and cool was you could use a first-person shooter with only controller mode, right? But then also with the gyro aiming, kind of like the Switch. But then when your thumb wasn't on the joystick, the gyro aiming would turn off. So you could do this motion where you're, like, looking around with the pad, and then you just lift your thumb and turn, and it will like reset your view in a way that like the Switch, you usually like hit a button to reset the view. So they've added a lot of little things in this to make the trackpad use, to make it more feel more like a mouse, and a motorcycle by my house, make it feel more like a mouse in, like, I think ways that will definitely help that experience.
And you said the thumbsticks themselves have that capacitance sensor too.
Yeah. The thumbsticks can detect when, just like the Index controllers, and I think the Oculus controllers have this as well. They can tell when your thumb is just resting on the stick. It's like magic.
Do we know anything about the library that will be available on this? Is it just straight across? If you could figure out kind of how to play it, like some games I know are just conducive to mouse and keyboard, so it's just like, you're not going to want to play those. But basically, you can just load up your Steam library.
Yeah. So more than your Steam library. So first of all, it also has the four back buttons. So that helps a little bit with keyboard bindings. And then, of course, you can plug it into a dock and just use it as a PC with a mouse and keyboard if you want. But it says you have access to your Valve told us you have access to your entire Steam library. And since this thing has a desktop and is just a PC, you could go download the Epic Game Store. You could go download Uplay or Origin and download whatever games kind of work through what's kind of this. It's a Linux based operating system, but then it's got this sort of like, I can't remember what the name, I'm not a huge Linux guy, but it's like an accessibility layer or something on it called Proton. And Proton, right now, you can go onto Proton's website and look at exactly what games are compatible. But basically, the Proton sort of like philosophy is, we just want to make Windows games work on Linux. So the odds are, or at least what Valve is aiming for, is anything that's on Steam will almost certainly work on this device. And then going beyond that is a little bit more like you might have to check, but like you'll just be able to download games and find out.
Did you get to turn it on from scratch, like off from off mode?
I don't think if we went from completely off.
I was wondering like what the startup's like, and like does it dump you into kind of your menu with your games like a Switch does, like very basic stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah. So there's like I mentioned, there is a whole desktop, but you can completely ignore that. And there is this sort of more console UI version of Steam that they've made. And it's nice, you know, if you've used Big Picture Mode, it's like a better version of Big Picture Mode pretty much on Steam.
Cool.
And yeah, it's just like a really kind of streamlined, accessible way to get around Steam. And then you can, if you want, but you don't have to, venture outside of that ecosystem as well.
Right.
It's very open.
Yeah.
So, Sam, what's your take on this? Does this seem like something you want?
Yeah. I mean, you know, with, you know, access to I have a PC and I'm able to, you know, run PC games. I have a great PC, but I never use it. I just the leap to convenience for some, for me who does not have like a monitor on a desk. I use my television in my living room to game on. It's just a little bit crappy. You'd have to pull out a keyboard and a mouse. I know there's ways around that, but this is my way around it. Like, this is what I want. This is how I'd like to play my Steam library. And, you know, I want to try as many games as possible. And that's why I got a PC. That's why I try to do it these other ways. But this will make it so much easier to play games and write about them and talk about them and everything. I think it's such a good tool for me specifically.
Mm-hmm. And Swaim, how about you?
Honestly, there's a lot of ins and a lot of outs. I see both sides. I'm really happy to hear how well it sounds like it controls from Tom, and Bo's coverage was great as well. But I do admit, well, for example, one of the pull quotes in our piece at IGN.com was that we're seeing this as a new, like an entry into a new market, the handheld PC. And I think there's some argument to be made as to whether it's like legitimately a new market. There might be room for it in between like tablets and a laptop, because a laptop's already a portable PC. I'm talking to you now on one. I play Steam games on it. And I do like the appeal. I am a console guy in the sense that I like the appeal of something that is designated a toy for my time off, and it doesn't do the other stuff. Because I'm someone who started using Oculus, realized there was a browser function, and was like, I'll check Slack real quick in VR and see what Calibro's up to. And I realized that I need that separation. So I don't know.
Agree.
That's like a little bit of the philosophical thing holding me back. But then the more I read about it and how it does seem like they put a lot of care into the control scheme and just how it's all put together, I got to admit, it's appealing to me more and more, especially because, you know, we are hungry for that. They should have called it like the Super Steam Pro just to dig at Nintendo. But I think it is kind of brilliant marketing to have been working on this exact specific thing and deploy it now. I think it's very savvy to present it as this is an entirely new thing, but I don't know if I really fully buy that argument. It's like a laptop with a controller attached, which I think they also said, and I'm like, that's the accurate description of this product. I also wonder, can you upgrade RAM? Is it like a PC in that sense? Like, can you crack it open and swap parts around? Do you know, Tom?
No.
I don't.
Yeah. You can try your darndest, right? Like, I'm sure tech-savvy people will be able to do it, but it is not – it's more like a laptop in that it is not designed to do that beyond having a slot for a micro SD card to expand the storage.
I think the library is the real appeal and the difference of this. I mean, we had a Vita before we had a Switch, right? And it's like – it's really about what you can get on this handheld system. And Nintendo's always had amazing libraries. Steam is the amazing library. And Nintendo's really, really stingy with pricing. They price things really high. Like, you can get, you know, probably the indie game that you want to play is going to be on Steam for $3 at some point, or $10. And it's always going to be $15 or $50 on the Switch. Like, that's a big deal. You know, that's why people have these giant stacks of unplayed games on Steam. Like, what... Yeah. This is a really, really cool way to access an amazing game library that, like, I really do not have a good way to do that right now. And I'm really excited about that purely.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Sam and Swaim are saying. I don't like to mix productivity and entertainment on one device. So I like to keep those things separate. So that's part of why Steam Deck is really appealing to me. But also, I can't help but think that, man, like, this does take away a lot of the novelty of the Switch, because, like, the Switch is, like, a big draw point for the Switch is that it turned games like The Witcher 3 into portable games.
Yeah.
It was the only way to play them on the go. And it was certainly playing Witcher 3 on the Switch isn't the ideal way to play The Witcher 3, but it did make it possible to play it on the go. But now you can play Witcher 3 the way it was intended in the ideal way on the go with the Steam Deck. So it's almost like, why would you play anything but Nintendo exclusives on your Switch when this is available?
Right. And
Tom, would this completely kill Witcher 3? Like, it would be great with it, right?
So we didn't see The Witcher 3 being played, but we did hear that they've tried it and it runs by default settings, basically, I think is what they said. That don't quote me on that, but like, I think it runs much better than it will or than it would on the Switch, right? The Switch was definitely like a degraded version of that game.
Yeah, and I think it was ported, it was altered.
Yeah, and I think you could get a pretty comparable experience to any sort of major or any sort of home console, not the Switch, that it has on this device.
Yeah. It is troubling that they're showing Portal 2 a whole lot on it. It's like, okay.
the funny thing was, like, we actually asked them about that. They were like, this is a funny game to show off, or like a good game to show off for this, because, you know, it's got the first person, but also works well with the controller. And they were like, oh yeah, we just kind of threw that on there. Like, they weren't even like planning on I think the main games they were showing us were like Control, Death Stranding, Jedi Fallen Order. Like, those were like the sort of like fancy ones they were trying to show off.
Like, Jedi Fallen Order, Death Stranding, I'd love to see. Like, what a cool point of reference. I thought it was on the Portal thing. We did a really cool article, which I recommend everybody listening to this check out. A bunch of cool articles today, but a really neat one is our FAQ, which is like 30 questions that like we asked Valve and they answered them all. Like, it's kind of crazy. We have a lot of information in there. And one of the things that was asked about is battery life. And they said 2 to 8 hours. And that's like a really funny thing because, you know, it's a huge range, right?
Yeah.
Based on what a PC is doing, it's like it's using more energy, right? And so we all know that to a lesser degree from a Switch. But that's a big range. But they said right smack dab in the middle, they said Portal 2, 4 hours.
Yeah. And I will point out the Switch's battery life is also about 2 to 8 hours, right? Yeah. Depending. So that's,
and the new one's not improving on that too much either, right?
The OLED Switch has basically the same battery life as the mid-cycle revision of the Switch, not the launch Switch. It's better than the launch Switch.
So this is also good for Xbox because everything, you know, all Xbox exclusives come to PC as well. So, like, unless I'm mistaken, this means that Halo Infinite is now a portable game on day one.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The major question,
one for this console, because this is coming after Halo, right? We don't know that technically.
Oh, well, yeah, we don't know when Halo Infinite or the Steam Deck will be out exactly.
End of the year, right? So we're not sure. I would say it would probably not be surprising if Halo ends up before this, but yeah.
Yeah, that could be.
This is one of those little things that I think is going to be a question that gets answered before this device actually comes out. As far as I understand right now, the Xbox and Microsoft like stores and apps on PC, which is the only way you can play Game Pass games through Xbox or through a PC, do not work on Proton yet, as far as I understand. But all of Microsoft's games do come through Steam, and Steam games are usually compatible with Proton. So the question of whether this is a Game Pass box yet or an Xbox box, oh my goodness, is like still a little bit in the air. I think we're going to figure that out over the next couple months. But Halo Infinite will probably be able to play on this thing pretty fine.
So it has Wi-Fi, and that's where you're going to be kind of like syncing up your Steam library. One thing that I think Steam, and please correct me if I'm wrong in this, I use Steam rarely except for this past year, which I've used it a lot. My stuff is constantly updating, like constantly. And if I'm playing a couple of games at once, there's just like, it seems like I'm always, you know, updating something. And I think that's like a luxury of like the PC environment. You don't have to play updated. You don't have to update your games. Like I put my game in like offline mode. And then like go on a plane on a trip and I don't like update, like it'll be fine, right? That'll all be okay.
Yeah. You can turn off auto updating, and if you're playing in offline mode, the game won't check for updates or whatever. It won't know there's an update.
Yeah. So you can presumably just load a stable version of your game up, you're playing it, and then it'll be fine for the go. Like, you don't need to be in some kind of online environment to do this.
No, not as far as I know. And I would be shocked if that is not 100% the case, because, you know, one of the things Valve kept reiterating to us over the time while we were there was how they didn't want to lock this thing down. Excuse me. They didn't want to have it be restrictive. They like the openness of the PC platform so much. So if you wanted to just wipe this drive and just put on Windows, right, you could just do that.
Yeah, I read that.
They're not trying to gate people out of whatever they want to do with this thing. And so I think that, the idea that they would be like, you always need an online connection or something like that is, I think, pretty unthinkable for it.
Yeah, yeah. I was just wondering, too, just because Steam, if there is I guess downloading games and stuff is always going to be a matter of your own internet. It should be fine.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Weird detail question. Did you get to see is there a standalone charging cable, or how does it replenish? Because my thing is if I take it on a 6-hour flight, can I comfortably plug that into, if I'm blessed with an outlet in between the seats?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's the power? How big's the brick?
I don't think we saw the official final one, because, this thing is still in active development to a certain extent, even though it's coming out later this year. There's nailing down the details of certain things. So it's going to have just a standard AC power adapter to USB-C, which it plugs in kind of on the top. And then you can also dock it, to plug into an HDMI or USBs or whatever you want. And they're going to be selling a dock separately that is an official one. But this thing will literally run with any compatible USB-C dock that you could buy off of Amazon. Okay. They showed us 3 different ones that they were just like, oh yeah, we just bought this on Amazon and it was running fine on it. So I think you'll be very flexible in terms of what you're going to be able to do with charging and that sort of stuff. And and it does come with that charger easily enough. And it also comes with a hard shell carrying case as well.
Yeah. So a Switch has a brick, but you don't have to use that. You can always plug into your iPhone USB adapter or whatever with the controller.
Yeah. Yeah, it just takes forever to charge.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. The Steam Deck, I think Valve said it's going to be shipping in December. I'm really into it. I'm definitely getting one. And I want to say, if I want to put this out there now, if this thing is successful and has fans are going to be called deckheads.
Okay.
We're just setting that up right now.
Well, have you heard what people are calling it on the interwebs right now, too?
What's that?
The Gabe Boy.
Well, that's good too. That is also pretty good. Okay, I'm going to share my screen here because we're going to look at this magazine. Tell me if you guys can see.
So we're cutting all topics. Well, the magazine. That's what we're doing this week.
What I'm doing is making sure we have time.
Hey, don't take this away.
Making sure.
This is the first time I've been on with a magazine. I'm super excited. All right,
you can take this segment, Michael.
Can you guys see the cover of the July 93 issue of Die Hard Game Fan?
Yes, indeed.
With zombies ate my neighbors on the cover.
Presumably. I mean, I have to get some fact checks from Swaim, who apparently just played Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
I just played through the first few worlds, but I do not remember most especially the blue guy with the television head, like the central figure.
Well, that's the Game Fan mascot. His name is Monitor. Monitor, like T-A-U-R. And he has his own comic in here.
Monitor, sure.
Yeah. We begin with an ad for Rolling Thunder 3 on the Genesis, which says, "We'll blow you away." And I just don't really think Rolling Thunder, I remember playing the original in arcades and it was like fine. But by the time Rolling Thunder 3 was coming around in 1993, I don't know that was really like a franchise that anyone was excited about.
No, and I don't think that game was trying to blow people away either.
It also says one of the features is password support with an exclamation point.
So no battery. Even,
yeah. What? In 1993, that's supposed to be a feature. Okay. So this is the main reason why I wanted to share this with everyone today. This is the letter from the editor.
This looks surprisingly like an early website.
Yeah, it actually does. Yeah. And this is the text is so small. What I did is took a picture of it so I could look it on my phone and blow it up. Gotcha. So this is what they say. "Welcome to issue number 6. We hope you like it. This month, I should be writing about the upcoming CES show, but instead, I must set the record straight and answer a grave injustice that has been inflicted upon us and many other publications and game companies. Just before press time, I got bombarded with phone calls from friends in the industry who received their copies of Electronic Gaming Monthly. Once again, they have acted childishly and lashed out. They did it to GamePro. They've done it to video games and computer entertainment. Uh-oh. And now they've done it to us. Big mistake. For no reason at all, in their gossip column of all places, they have accused us of selling illegally copied games and selling the games we review. Let me first answer to these libelous accusations. First of all, we don't sell games. We are a magazine. They're obviously confusing us with Die Hard Game Club. And that is because I am here. Yes, I started Die Hard Game Club back in 1990.
I can see a line of confusion developing from this.
I left Game Club and started Game Fan. Die Hard Game Club is a separate corporation in a separate location, blah, blah, blah. So he says, Die Hard Game Club to this day will never sell copying devices. We have obviously beaten EGM so badly that they must now resort to childish backstabbing in an attempt to tarnish our reputation.
Wow.
Now, I don't have like circulation numbers in front of me, but I feel like Electronic Gaming Monthly was like the number one gaming magazine of the 90s. Yeah. I don't think it was Die Hard.
I've never heard of this magazine. So.
Yeah.
But right, Dan? You saw this?
I actually did. I liked this magazine. Yeah. I'm gonna skip around. They say that EGM was the first magazine to introduce game copiers in their May 1992 issue with the feature "The Super Magicom Transfers SNES Cards to Computer Discs." So trying to turn it back around.
We're not stealing games. You're stealing games.
Yeah, exactly. And then it goes back to as far as their gossip column goes, none of it holds water. It states that the new Mario collection is 8-bit when it is 16. Should have read Game Fan. We have shots that came directly from Nintendo of Japan. So they're talking about Mario All-Stars.
Yeah, wow.
Right?
Yeah. Taking jabs at Quarterman.
Yeah, exactly. Who writes this stuff? It totally contradicts what's shown elsewhere in the very same issue. Anyway, blah, 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 keeps going on and on and on. He ends up with, "I hope I've made it clear to them how our company is structured so they'll leave Die Hard Game Club alone and get off our backs here at Game Fan. In a magazine that they have spent over $150,000 in advertising with." I think they're saying Die Hard Game Club puts advertising in Electronic Gaming Monthly. Well, he says, "Well, that's it. I'm very sorry that I had to take a section I usually have fun with and air dirty laundry, but this knife in my back is killing me and my staff is staring at me saying, do something. Hey, it's the end of what we think is our best issue. The last thing we needed was this." That's the letter from the editor in this issue.
I
not
admire
now. This is the giant baby issue.
Yeah,
it's my
exactly.
masterpiece.
Yeah. Yes. Speaking of giant babies, this guy, right? That's the baby on the cover. I have to point out here that I bet CES was totally ruined that year because of this.
Yeah, because of this scandal. Man,
it just makes me nostalgic for when we used to go into the office in the city. You know, you'd see someone from Polygon and you just whip your switchblade out and get a dance fight.
Yeah. Yep. We've all had knives in our backs from this rough and tumble industry.
It's true. We have an ad for Mortal Kombat coming to consoles, but it says coming to leading video game systems, September 93. Obviously, it came to Genesis and Super Nintendo, and that was another controversy over the blood, right? But I guess 2 months before release, the deals weren't finalized enough to put Genesis and Super Nintendo in this ad.
Everything. It was on Game Boy and PC and on Game Gear and everywhere they could put it. But maybe they just never made that leap to Jaguar that Atari was hoping for.
Yeah, why is Raiden spelled wrong?
Is it really? How did they spell it?
Oh,
it's
totally.
With a Y.
Right? Oh, wow. Called it R-A-Y-D-E-N. Yeah.
Rays of electricity.
That's really silly. True. And this is an interesting section. It's called Viewpoint. It's kind of like the review crew on EGM, where they have four people weighing in on a game. But these
no,
this,
it's not.
But this, but this doesn't count for their reviews. They see like Splatterhouse. They have their breakdowns, and then they say see review on page 22. So that reviews are separate. Here's another section where four people score a game.
Oh my gosh.
But they're deemed reviewers. Like, yeah. Officially. Yeah. Okay.
That's right. It says Viewpoint is a place you must visit before you go out and buy your games. That way all the good developers will get rich and all the bad ones will either be forced to improve or become TV evangelists.
But we don't sell games.
You know,
it's a different company.
Yes.
Honestly, this page is kind of like early Metacritic, right? it's an aggregator.
Is it an aggregator?
It's aggregator, no. But of their staff, oh, yeah. Right? It's
these
multiple opinions
weirdos,
rapid fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got four people rating the games but not reviewing them, and they rate them with a percentage out of 100. So, for instance, The Enquirer rated Splatterhouse 3 an 89%, but he said, Jason's back! Splatterhouse 3 is Namco's grossest game on any home system since Splatterhouse 2. But, I mean, Jason's not in Splatterhouse.
So it's like, what is happening?
I don't know what he's saying. Jason's back. No, he's not really.
I guess it's the, guy with ski mask, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, hockey mask. Everyone's top pick this month was Rock and Roll Racing, which is something I haven't played. This is also confusing because they list all these games.
If you would like that game, it's not super fun. Well, when we have an office again, we'll check it out. Yeah. But it has a licensed MIDI version of Metal Song soundtrack, and it has Highway Star and Paranoid, and it's like, it just sounds great. It's a really funny early licensed music game.
I think that one's free on PC, right? Because Blizzard made all their classic games free to download. I think
maybe it's a Super Nintendo game,
maybe not,
or it might be in the Blizzard arcade collection, right?
Oh yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. This is their comic strip starring Monitor. I didn't even read it, but I just know that this panel where,
oh my god,
Sergeant Gamer just blows apart a cyborg man and he explodes with guts and bolts and stuff. Kid Damon would have eaten this up.
Yeah, I like the just incredibly obvious pencil and colored pencil finishing of this project.
Yeah, rock.
It's pretty good. Just so crappy.
In their review, this is their review of Splatterhouse 3. And this is why I remember liking this magazine, especially Sam. Look at the layout here. Like, there's just a whole page of just screenshots. And then they've cut out individual sprites and enlarged them. So you really got to see, like, the sprite work.
Yeah.
That's great. Neat. I mean, this is an era in which, like, 2D sprites were, like, the coolest thing you could possibly imagine. This is, like, a really good showcase of this. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. A preview of Strider Returns, and it says one can never get enough of Strider, the once mighty arcade and Genesis smash hit. It's on everyone's hit list even today. Well, unfortunately, Strider Returns is a terrible game that was not made by Capcom, and it's not considered canon in Strider lore.
Remember that recent Strider reboot that was kind of a Metroidvania? That was cool.
I don't think it even counts as recent anymore because it was like 2014 or something.
It was a while ago.
And then here's a preview for Gauntlet, the original Gauntlet coming to Genesis. And it says, for years, Gauntlet has been a favorite of many gamers, but until now, it had never been released on a home format. But it was on NES? Format? On a home format.
Yeah, it was on NES.
Exactly.
And unofficially, because it's a Atari game.
Exactly.
I can't remember if there's a Tengen version of it, but there's an official version of it. What'd you say?
Are those the level maps, it looks like? That's pretty
cool. Well, not the full levels. The game. Yeah.
Oh, just screen caps, I see.
Yeah, just screen caps. Yeah, so I don't know what they're talking about. Gauntlet was definitely on NES, please.
Yeah, it was.
RoboCop versus Terminator preview. This is a game very
You know what, Damon?
Dear to my
it
heart.
Could have been on NES after that.
Well, that's what I wonder. Did it come out to NES after 1993?
Not after.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably crazy. Not. A preview of they call it Mega Drive, but this would a game called KO Flying Squadron that would eventually go to Sega CD and is a cool like cute 'em up, a side scrolling cutesy shoot 'em up with anime artwork. That's a pretty cool game. Next time you're visiting your friend Swaim that has an ability to play lots of old games, check out this one. Scroll to the K's and check out KO Flying Squadron.
I was busy playing Night Trap on an arcade machine to make up for it being taken away from me when I was a kid.
A podcast I'm a fan of that doesn't really do game coverage ever did a pretty in-depth episode. It's called Stuff You Should Know on Night Trap. And recently.
Great pod.
Yeah, awesome. And it was really good. Yeah, and like, you know, there's a bunch of cool stuff in there, but like the fact that Night Trap existed as a VHS-based switching track device in the mid-80s before it was ever a laser or a CD-based game is just the coolest thing ever.
This is a preview of Cyber Aleste coming to Sega CD, and I love how they've laid out it's a vertical scrolling shooter.
Oh, that's cool too.
So they've laid out the levels vertically along the page. Yeah. But I want to read just a small excerpt from it, and I just want to remind everyone, these are not my words. I'm reading someone else's words that they wrote in this magazine. It says, to choose a game to port over from the Mega CD, one must have wisdom, and Confucius say, Tengen make excellent choice.
Oh, man.
Blocked.
Yeah, there you go.
Blocked. Yeah, Tengen is the, I just was mentioning, that's the Atari publishing arm that got, you know, all those black plastic cartridges out for the NES and to get Tetris on there. And it was a big lawsuit.
They have a big preview for a game called Sylphide coming to Sega CD. Game. But I mean, I've never played it. And they're talking it, they literally call it the best shooter ever. Welcome to an exclusive look at the best 16-bit shooter ever created, Sylphide by Game Arts. In fact, if this game appeared in the arcades, people would stand in line to play it. It's that good. But nobody talks about Sylphide today, so I don't know. I think that it was just impressive looking at the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Virtua Racer. You know, like that was the coolest looking game I'd ever seen in my entire life. But we moved on from Virtua Racer pretty fast. It was just big blocky triangles. But Star Fox lived on because, you know, I think people fell in love with those anthropomorphic animals.
Yeah. Preview for another Genesis game called Ex Ranza, which I haven't played, but I think it's supposed to be good. And then another page of just screenshots where it just says incredible line scrolls.
This is cool. I mean, that's hard to do that layout. They would probably have to take a bunch of like
all
pictures off a screen and then paste them together to get that kind of resolution. It's great.
I like incredible line scrolls.
Pages in the same red font. It just said ultra smooth and fast.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Incredible line scrolls. And then
for those that are just listening to this podcast, we show a page with lots of mini previews and the text is illegible. You cannot read it because it's blue. It's color blue font on black background.
And but it looked okay on the layout program they're using, which is indicated by that amazing computer what would you even call it? A paint program previews logo up there. How awesome is that? That would have been the most futuristic thing on Earth at the time to put in a magazine. Was this made with a computer?
This reminds me of, have you ever seen the very original Naughty Dog logo? Like the one that they designed in their dorm when they were first dreaming of having a video game company? Oh, look it up. It's so 90s. Okay. It's got that paint and color pencil feel for sure.
Yes.
And do you guys see the screen of Zombies Ate My Neighbors right in the middle? There's your giant baby.
Oh, yeah.
Where?
Giant baby confirmed.
Honey, I blew up the kids.
Yeah. Preview of Yoshi's Cookie on Super Nintendo. Everyone likes Mario, and that's a fact. Bulletproof Software has developed the one puzzle game that I can't seem to stop playing. It's even better than Tetris. So, sorry, Sam.
Everybody's agreed with that ever since.
Yep. Yep.
That was the end for Tetris.
A preview of a Super Nintendo game called Troddlers, which is apparently a Lemmings-like.
Ooh, I don't know if played. This came
is that
out.
Troglodytic toddlers? What is that?
I don't know. And then their TurboGrafx section is called Turbo Tunes, but I don't know why. Okay. Like, why tunes?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
It's T-O-O-N-S like cartoons, but I don't get the connection at all. Mm-hmm. They have a preview for Cotton, which is relevant just because Cotton Reboot is coming out next week, I think. This is another cute 'em up side-scrolling game.
Look at that cool pixel art on the side of this thing.
The enlarged. Pixel, I think that's a boss in the game. And then games were so scarce at this point for Turbo and the PC Engine that they're previewing a game that came out 4 or 5 years earlier in Japan, just saying, hey, here's something that if you need something to play, it's Batman. And it says, here's an old one for all you Turbo owners who are starving for some quality games. Back in the late 80s, companies were serious about producing quality PC Engine titles, and Batman was one of the best. It just says up in the corner, available now, Japan.
Oh, boy.
So, it's interesting that they're
seeing that Batman game, actually.
It's a top-down, room-by-room scrolling Batman game.
Yeah, this page appeals to me.
Yeah. And then they have a preview section for a console called the FM Towns Marty, which is something I've never even heard of. But they preview multiple games for it. It says Marty is a powerful ally with the brains. It says Marty is a powerful ally with the brains it takes to make smart television a reality. With Marty, you can experience a marvelous dimension in intelligent interactive television performance. So that makes it sound like full motion video interactive games. But then this game, Galaxy Force 2, looks like a Space Harrier type shoot 'em up. So I don't know. I don't know what the FM Towns Marty is.
Why does it mention the CDI up in the top?
No, it says Genocide 1 and 2 on one CD!
Oh,
exclamation
one
point.
CD. Yeah. Okay. A little blurry for me.
Does Marty commit genocide? I'm very confused.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. Diehard game fan. There's an ad for something called Tomo Distribution, professional service for today's competitive market. And then there's like, for order info, dealer and wholesales only, please. So I think this is an ad for like retail, and you can call and place orders for games.
I guess so.
Does that make sense?
I
mean, so not for consumers.
Sort it out. It's kind of weird to have to.
Yeah, exactly. But then what I really like about this ad is in the bottom right corner in front of a graphic. It just says, we are the best.
Yeah. Yeah. In front of a computer graphic, no less.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
What's the left of it? Like a lumpy planet?
I think it's planets. Yeah. I think they're just planets. There's an ad for Super Turrican on Genesis and Nintendo. And I just think, or I'm sorry, it's Super Nintendo and NES. I didn't know Super Turrican came to NES. Sam, did you?
No, it didn't come to NES.
Yeah, maybe it didn't actually come out. But I just want to point out there's a quote, one of the best from diehard game fan, rival Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Yeah.
Hands-on portables, Mortal Kombat for Game Gear and Game Boy. They say, you won't believe how good Mortal Kombat looks on the Game Gear. The character detail and animation is amazing, and the gameplay is excellent. They don't have anything to say about the Game Boy version, though.
I didn't believe it when I played it. It was amazing.
It's really that impressive?
When I played it at the time, I could not believe that Mortal Kombat was, you know, so violent and playable on the Genesis or on the Game Gear. And emphasis on the violent. The Game Boy version was so funny. It just did not work. It was just the slowest, crappiest, barely scrolling, just big blobs of poop fighting each other. Great.
There's a
like Clay Fighter, but okay.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an article on the Punisher and the arcade game Punisher. It says, what does it say? If you thought that there would never be a fighting game better than Final Fight, you're about to change the way you look at fighting games. Punisher is definitely the greatest side-scrolling fighting game ever. Blah, blah, blah. I like this game, but I don't think that's actually true.
Seems late for Punisher 93.
And finally, in other stuff, which is like their gaming section, they say, for all you loyal Turbo fans out there, Konami's about to make you very happy with the Super CD-ROM version of the original Castlevania. I don't think that ever happened. I don't think the original Castlevania ever came to Turbo. Yeah. And then the other thing is Sega has announced an all-new Streets of Rage 3. This 24 meg sequel will feature an undercover cop who is a master of disguise. Nope. Streets of Rage 3 has the same three characters from the first two games, and it's just to beat them up, and there's nothing about a cop going undercover.
So they have about as good of a record as Quarterman by this point.
It's true.
Despite the taunting.
And there you have it. That was the July, I'm going to stop sharing my screen, the July 1993 issue of Die Hard Game Fan. And Sam learned that this magazine existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Babies everywhere. Bye, babies.
In the interest of time, that brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from John from Baltimore. Let the questioning begin.
Oh, boy. Now, Tom, do you need a refresher on video game 20 questions at all, or are you good to go?
No, I'm good to go. But also, every time Damon invites me on the show, I always forget that it's a thing. And then we get to this moment and I go, oh, no.
It's the most high pressure segment of any podcast I've been on.
It's only high pressure because you noobs are on right now and you have to win.
Exactly.
Hey, I've helped out in the past. I know. I've gotten a couple, but yeah.
People carrying on the tradition of the multi-part question hack. Are we still doing that?
Yeah. I've tried it several times. I've been relentlessly mocked by my fellow panel.
All right. I support that.
And I think we should stick to it.
Damon, is this game a shooter, platformer, or RPG?
No.
It worked.
Yeah, but now you have to remember the games you asked, so we don't.
So we not don't. A shooter, platformer, or RPG.
In one question. Mm-hmm. So efficient.
This is that's like the same method you use to cheat at Guess Who. Is this person wearing glasses or a hat?
Oh, that's not bad.
No, that wasn't my question, but yes.
Yes. That'd be a good video game 20 questions question, I guess. Is this from after the year 2000?
No.
What did RPG shooter or platformer was the things?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Before the year 2000.
Will this is game this a puzzle playable? Game? A puzzle game, a sports game, or a fighting game?
Puzzle game, sports game. Yes.
Okay. Puzzle, sports, or fighting. Okay.
Now
okay.
That's inefficient because now we do have to ask. Yeah.
I guess I don't know the right way to ask this. Was this an arcade game?
No.
That's a good question. Because those all got ported right, so much. Yeah.
Right. Also, a lot of fighting games came from or have arcades as well, right? So potentially that means it's less likely there.
So it was fighting, puzzle, or
sport.
Okay. Is this game? Do you commit acts of violence in this game?
No, and that's five.
So not a fighting game.
Not a fighting game.
We know a lot for five questions, though. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's a peaceful puzzler or a sports game. It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Before 2000.
What's a peaceful sport? Game. Billiards.
Fishing. No, fishing's pretty mean to the fish.
Sport fishing. That's an act of violence for sure.
Yeah, clay pigeons.
Will this game be playable on the Steam Deck?
No.
Possibly a Nintendo, or possibly just too old. Okay. Notable puzzle games from 2000.
Yeah, Nintendo is. Or sports. Maybe he's going the Olympics route because it's coming up, right? I don't know.
Maybe it's a peaceful fighting game.
Undertale.
I like. Yeah.
Doesn't really count though.
Peaceful RPG. Can play it peacefully. Let's see. Is this a 2D game?
No.
3D.
Would we really have a sport game?
It's got to happen sometime, right?
A 3D peaceful puzzle.
So many episodes.
I don't know.
I'm leaning. My heart says
Tetrasphere.
Should we just resolve that?
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
Is this a puzzle game?
No.
Oh, it's a sports game. Well, we're screwed. Or it's a peaceful fighting game, which sounds
not
like an oxymoron. Yeah.
Is this a Nintendo made game or like with Nintendo characters?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, okay. So it's a Mario sports game probably.
And it's 3D, so potentially kart.
Yeah, and also because there's the topical connection to Mario Golf right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we got to narrow down the sport.
I mean, this one's in the pocket, as they say in pool, probably.
When they're doing good at pool. Do you drive in this game, Damon?
No.
What about balls?
That would include golf games if there's a cart. Oh, do you drive? That's true.
Do you drive balls?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we get the drive question back, and then we get this with less because it's Mario Ball.
Then it's baseball or golf, right? It's probably golf.
You don't drive baseballs.
I drive them to center field. A line drive? Come on.
Yeah, that is true. It's
okay. A line drive. Okay. Okay.
But I think probably we could assume it's
golf. I just got out baseball right. By Michael Swain. And you know what? Okay. I'm not ashamed.
So we're circling around some sort of Mario Golf drain here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we should prolong this as much as possible.
Pre-2000s.
No. Yeah. I think it's either the Mario Golf on Game Boy, which it's not because he said it was not 2D. So it's just the Mario Golf on Nintendo 64, which is just called Mario Golf 64 or something. What's it called?
Damon, is the game Mario Golf 64 or some shit?
Yes, it sure is. Sure is. It's just Mario Golf.
Okay.
Yeah. Only for Nintendo 64. Yes, nicely job. I think the multiple genre questions. Hack? I don't think you need to. I mean, this is the first time it really helped you, I think.
Rude. Yeah. That's so rude.
I've listened to the episodes and it doesn't usually help that much.
Yeah.
Wow, doubling down on the rudeness.
But the funny thing is, like, also, I feel like once we got the three genres, we spent just as many questions narrowing down which of the genres it was if we had just asked the three genres independently.
But for some reason, the shape of the other questions around those three genres helped us kind of puzzle things out, I think. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, so here's the thing, Tom, is that like if you get a yes on your first three, then you're like really narrowed down. Because then you only have, you know, at least one or two other questions to get to it. And you can combine the violence question and stuff like that to get there.
Yeah.
But maybe we need to group the questions a little bit better. Like maybe, you know, puzzle, sport, and, you know, something more peaceful or something. I don't know. Mm. Some other fringe genre should be in one. Whereas
there's
like
synergy between the.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas like fighting, racing, and I don't know. You know.
I appreciate the 20 questions meta evolving between my eyes right here. Before my eyes.
I like high risk, high reward. That's why I asked, did this game come out on August 5th, 1998? If he says yes, oh, baby, you got it.
Do you know any game that came out on August 5th, 1998?
I'd have to look it up now. I don't know.
And we usually ask if this has been in the magazine issue, and this couldn't have been in the magazine issue.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, it could have maybe in that prediction column.
And it reminds me, I got to try the new one because I hear it's loads of fun with pals.
Yes. Can you
I loved this original Mario Golf on N64. That was great. Thank you for the suggestion.
I have a quick question real quick.
What's that?
What was your driving question aiming at? Because when we had narrowed it down to that point, would any of these games have had a car in it?
Oh, had we already eliminated all the carts? All the Mario Kart?
Yeah,
you would think those are sports games?
Yeah, it depends on if racing was sport.
Oh,
or
I consider racing the sport of kings.
I think you were right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think we needed to eliminate Kart. That's right. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for your suggestion. John from Baltimore. Viewers and listeners, if you have your own suggestions for Video Game 20 questions, email them to me at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. That is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to Sam, Tom, and Michael. Thank you to both Mariah and Kate working behind the scenes, making sure this episode is possible. We will be back next week with more scoops and good humor for you. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
Dear stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolph as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the heresies of Radolph Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.